The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
In the darkness lies the unknown. Travel with us, as it's time now for the Paranormal View, with your hosts, Henry Foister, Barbara Duncan, and Jeffrey Gould. And welcome, everybody, right here to the Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for taking the time to be with us tonight. Those listening in the chat room and those from around the world, we appreciate each and every one of you. And we're going to have a great show lined up for tonight. So sit back, enjoy. If you've got questions, you can take and send those questions to either Ceiling Cat, Jeffrey Gould, or myself, and we will get those answered for you. I'm getting a lot of feedback.
I thought it was just me.
No, I think it's coming in through our guest's phone. Yeah.
It's the spirits.
But want to thank you. And if you're listening from somewhere else other than in the chat room, feel free to come over, para-x.com, and click on live chat, and you'll be in with these wonderful people. Matter of fact, we have a new site now you can go to. It's para-xradionetwork.com. And then you'll see the chat button up in the left-hand corner. Click on it, and you'll be in the chat room. So it's a brand-new website, a page for our show, and you'll really enjoy it. It's laid out very nicely with lots of information on the shows, and gives you all the information of when they're on and how to listen to them and their archives and everything. Very nicely done. So I'll give it to you one more time. It's para-xradionetwork.com. And it's all one word. So feel free to come on over. Now, let's see, I already said that, didn't I? I'm getting
so we can't really call, can we no longer actually call it Para-X, or is that something?
Well, it's still Para-X.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. But that's why they had to change the new name for our webpage.
Oh. Okay.
For the show. So that's where all the information's at now. Now, if you do have questions though, and you don't want to come into the chat room, you can still send a question to theparanormalview@gmail.com. Our host Barbara Duncan is monitoring that. So. We have that all covered, just like before. This is the first show that we're doing without Kat Cloco, because she is dropped off of everything paranormal, and she is totally doing comic books now. So she's into that real heavy, where she draws, writes, and goes to all the events. So she's real heavy into that. So we wish her well. With that, though, we have a great guest lined up for tonight, and I believe I'll let Jeffrey go ahead and introduce our guest.
Yes, well, tonight our guest is a lecturer, paranormal researcher, inventor, and radio host Mike Stevenson. He's an audio and broadcast engineer, and he's had a long history in the paranormal and spiritual in nature long before he officially became a paranormal investigator. And he's accumulated over 40 years' experience in electrical and broadcast engineering, with which he's been able to utilize in scientific experimentation and inventions in the paranormal. He's a member of several paranormal societies affiliated with several core groups in his area. He's the director of research in the Paranormal Man Organization and the audio specialist for the Society for the Haunted Research Group, and the organizer and chief instructor for the Investigators League. And since 2009, Mike has been the historian for the Haunted Ramblewood House, better known as the Worthington House in Maryland. And he's a member of the International Paranormal Acknowledgement Awards Association and a research member in good standing with the oldest and most respected research group in the world, the Ghost Club in Suffolk, England, with memberships dating back to 1863. And he's the author of several reference books on genealogy and historical information involving the paranormal, as well as books on true ghost stories. So welcome back, Mike Stevenson.
It's great to be back. Great to be back.
Now, I want to ask you a question. Are you in the chat room?
I pulled it up. I don't know if I'm totally in it or not. Normally, I don't do that, but since I was right here with my laptop, I thought I'd try.
Well, I don't see him in there.
See you, but if you do go in, make sure you mute the sound that's in there, because that's what's.
I got my speaker muted, so hopefully that will take care of that.
Okay, well, we'll try it and see, but I still think it's feeding back. So
it's probably some sort of Skype-y thing.
Yeah, but anyway, he's not on Skype. He's on phone.
You've got me on phone.
And who knows Skype. How many ghosties he has written around him anyway.
That is possible now. Yes.
Yeah.
They do seem to follow me around.
we do want to welcome you, Mike. This isn't the first time you've been on with us, but you're always a great guest because you get lots of information. Of course, we have with us Jeffrey Gould. And
hello. And
Barbara Duncan.
Yep.
I won't forget you guys, even though I got things twisted around. I've had a hectic weekend. I investigated last night only for, I don't know, maybe 2 hours, 2.5, something like that. The place we went to was just kind of like dead calm. We didn't feel anything, so we didn't stay for very long.
Where was it? What was it?
Back at the Preble County Historical Society.
Oh.
But I did still ended up getting a couple EVPs anyway, so.
Well, that's something.
Yeah. Well, I usually get something. I mean, you don't feel like you do until after you go back and listen, but who's out?
Yeah, that's a good question for the guests, too. I mean, and you, Henry. Is there ever a location that you go to and there's consistently activity every single time you go or every night?
Mike, you want to answer that? And then I'll...
I kind of missed part of that. Could you repeat it, please?
I'm
sorry.
Is there ever a site that you go to that is consistently active paranormal-wise? I mean, every single time you go there, every night you're there, that you pick up something.
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, the Ramblewood House or the Worthington House, whichever way you want to call it, it's an old mansion that's on the property of the Ramblewood Campgrounds in Darlington, Maryland. I have actually investigated there, I don't even know the number, but I'll say over 50 different times during the last 7 years. And I take other groups there, and the place has always been active for me. Now, sometimes people will go there and they may or may not get anything or even much. Every time I'm there, it's always active. And it's like I had a group there a couple weeks ago, and I told them, you know, why don't you stay longer? This group only wanted to stay a few hours. I said, if you stay late at night or in the morning, everything starts occurring. Well, they left around midnight, 1 o'clock, and lo and behold, between the hours of 3 and 5 a.m., the place literally lit up with communication. At one point, actually, it was about 4:30 in the morning, a evil spirit that I know was hanging around in the basement of this place yelled out some information I had asked him earlier during an EVP session. And I was up with another friend of mine, another investigator. We were up on the third floor of the building, and his voice screamed through so loud that it actually rattled the windows. And I don't usually get scared or anything, but this time it did actually raise a few hairs on my back.
That sounds awful.
Wow.
Now, Henry, you mentioned it's calm, but then you get EVPs when you don't know you get EVPs, obviously.
Yes. We was out in the barn, and it was just me and my son, Tim, and the caretaker, Misty. And they have a whole bunch of old buggies and wagons, horse-drawn wagons, and all those things out in the barn. And we've been asking questions, and I just asked a question of, did you drive these wagons? And I got an answer saying no. So, I mean, when you know, it's nice that you get stuff like that, even though we asked a ton of questions, and that's the only one that we had answered. So then in the house, we was going to go upstairs to the room upstairs where there's supposed to be a little girl. And as we were going upstairs, I got a EVP because I had a recorder in the room off to the right. And I got a recording in there, just said, hello. So you get those. And I mean, we was there for 2 hours asking questions, and it was the only thing we got. Everything was nice and quiet because the three of us stayed together the whole time. So sometimes you just feel like, you know, they aren't really wanting to talk. And so you just don't get anything. There's other places, you know, you can go to and you can be there forever, seems like, and you don't get anything at all. So I think it's just at the particular time, if they want to communicate, or if they don't, they're not going to. So
Mike, do you rely mostly on EVPs for evidential results, or do you use cameras and other tech stuff?
Yeah, I also use cameras. I use both thermal and infrared and full spectrum cameras. And I usually, I guess I'm the paranormal paparazzi. I usually end up catching some good stuff, particularly at Redwood, honestly, but a lot of other places too.
Well, which is one of my questions is, what is your theory on how spirits speak into recorders, how their voices get recorded?
Well, number one, we have to understand that the spirits are actually just the soul of a person, and as such, they are pure energy. They don't have a body. Therefore, they don't have a mouth nor ears, so they can't speak or hear. But due to the fact they are energy, they're able to create a magnetic flux line, and they send this out. And usually they try and direct it to an object which we can understand because they are intelligent. So if they send a magnetic field of flux into where a microphone is, the microphone is not operating as a microphone at that point. It's more like an antenna. There is no percussion to make the microphone work, but the microphone usually has a coil of wire and a magnet in it. And by sending a magnetic flux line to it, this will put the same thing as a voice on in the wiring into the amplifier, and therefore it gets recorded that way. And it's also why sometimes they come distorted. It's like trying to tune in a radio station and you're off the station a little bit and it gets distorted. That's also why we can miss EVPs and even have them slightly distorted. For instance, if we have a stereo a recorder and they're getting in the right microphone but not in the left, that's the reason, because the angle at which they're trying to send it to us wasn't accurate enough to hit both microphones at the same time.
Mike, I'm trying to understand the correlation we can make with psychics being able to hear these spirits and recorders. Do you think it's more of a thought process that they're being able to communicate as opposed to actual?
Most definitely.
Okay.
Yes, it most definitely. What they're sending us is what we would normally perceive as a direct communication through our thought, just as a psychic would. Most psychics are able to do this. They kind of tune themselves into it, so to speak. Our brain actually gives off magnetic impulses. It's how our nerve endings actually work. And if I remember correctly, the frequency or pulse frequency that our nervous system works at is 22 cycles, approximately 20 to 22 cycles, which is also why it explains why people have a fear cage problem where they feel sick in certain rooms or what have you because of electrical wires or electrical transformers nearby. Remembering that in the United States, we use 60 cycles as our AC current. Well, 60 is 3 times 20. So that frequency will still leak in even though it's 3 times the actual frequency. So that's what creates a lot of that. And it's the same thing that medicine has been using for quite some time. They have a device called an EEG, which measures brainwave patterns. And that is actually picked up through a magnetic sensor that they put on your head in different spots to actually read the impulses coming from your brain.
So that sensor can pick up on spirits.
Yes.
So,
I was just going to say, I have picked up certain, I call it EMIs, electromagnetic intelligence. It's actually a more scientific type name. But I picked up a lot of these communications through a device most telephone repairmen use called an inductive amplifier. The interesting thing about it is nothing more than a amplifier with a detector stage, and it has a coil of wire as its antenna, and it's basically used to pick up loose or wiring of telephone lines that aren't making good contact. Therefore, they're generating a conversation out of the wiring, so this device will pick them up. Well, using this same principle, you can pick up a spirit speaking to you if they spoke in the direction of the inductive amplifier. Again, this also proves the fact that they are not using the same method of communication that we ourselves are using, because we need percussion to make our voice heard.
Yeah, vocal cords and all. But now, what about auditory hearing? I mean, I'm not, as sensitive psychic as many. I mean, I have little, what I call pointless flashes, but I was at the home of a then girlfriend, and although I was aware she had a ghost in the house, I was in the kitchen at 3 a.m. and suddenly right next to me a female voice clearly said the word "hey" so clearly and enunciated that I thought that my girlfriend had simply snuck up on me. So it wasn't startling or anything. I just turned expecting to see my friend Sharon, and I ended up turning in a slow revolution 180 degrees to realize I was alone in a tiled kitchen, that no one could have snuck up on me or gotten away from me fast enough after saying the word "hey."
Precisely. That was a direct communication, just as most psychics will receive it. It was actually sent directly to your brain. And you heard it, what a lot of psychics are called, like the inner ear. It wasn't using your ears. It sounded to you like it possibly came through the air, but it really was a direct transmission.
Oh. Then how was my brain able to interpret it as only coming into the right ear?
It just seemed like that. Your brain decides whether it's in stereo or mono. Whatever direction it came from, your brain may have interpreted it as coming from the right side, or the entity may have very well been on the right side of you. And because of that, your brain may have been able to figure that out, that this was in the direction the voice was coming from. It probably wasn't able to tell the difference between a direct communication, because they may have been so close to you. I mean, they may have been standing right next to you, or floating, as it will. And because of that, the signal was so strong that it came in crystal clear.
Ah, okay. Because, yeah, I was on the Queen Mary once, and I had a ghost dog bark in my face. I could tell right in three-dimensional space where it would have been standing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that often happens a lot. Recently, I was doing a EVP session, and I was actually using a Bill Chappell device called the Ovilus. And I was having a nice conversation with an entity. And about in the middle of the conversation, the entity stopped speaking for a moment. But I wasn't aware of this because I was still hearing something I thought the Ovilus had said. And I repeated back my question because I wasn't sure what I heard. So what I said was, am I what? I was questioning what I had heard because I was missing part of what was said that I thought the Ovilus had reproduced, even though it does it sort of in a computer-type voice. But I heard a voice, but it was faint, so I mistook it. And when I took the recording and amplified what was the blank space of where the Ovilus stopped talking, I realized that the Ovilus stopped talking. The entity that was talking through the Ovilus actually paused for a moment because another spirit was trying to talk to me directly. And he did repeat his question to me after I asked, am I what? His question was, am I dead?
Hmm. And we got a great comment in the chat room, and I wanted to kind of expand on it a little bit. And that is the phenomenon of hearing slamming doors and creaking pipes and rattling chains, if you want to go that theory. But when we start talking about, say, a residual haunt versus an active haunt, where the door, you hear a door slam, but the door is actually still closed, is that a reverberation or an echo of energy?
I believe it's an echo of energy that remain there in the place where you're investigating. What's interesting is in most cases, what you're hearing, whether it be a percussion sound, such as a door slamming or a voice or sentence someone saying, it will not be what your discussion is at the moment. Like if you're trying to talk to an entity, it's not going to be in that conversation. It'll be something totally different. And normally it's more than one word. It could be a phrase or a sentence you're hearing. And interestingly enough, it's often clearer than the regular EVPs we get. I usually say the thing like, is it live or is it Memorex? That's an old, for us who have been around a while. That's kind of the situation with the residual.
Wow. Okay.
Now, we understand how they're projecting the sound that we can hear in words on our recorders. How do they hear what questions we're asking them?
Well, it's kind of the whole thing in reverse, remembering that they can't speak to us. They have no mouth. They can't hear us directly because they have no ears. So they're transmitting to us their thoughts, and that's what is getting recorded on our recorders, or in some cases where we're lucky enough, they can actually hear it, or you can actually hear it, I should say. By the same token, as we ourselves are thinking a question or a statement, they can, if they're close enough, they can actually read that communication through your brain.
Hmm.
Oh, yes.
So they're in
our it's a thought process. A thought energy, which, you know, we don't think about it, but when we're angry, we project that energy outward, even though we're thinking the thoughts, but not speaking them.
That's right. You know, and it's interesting. Sometimes, oddly enough, you're able to actually get an answer to a question you have yet to ask. In other words, you've thought of it, but you haven't articulated it yet. And lo and behold, on the recorder, you'll have an answer to that question, and it's simply because they read it before we did, so to speak.
So not only can they see you in the shower, they can hear what you're thinking, too.
Yeah. And, you know, it's odd. I know a lot of people talk about using trigger objects and stuff like that. I kind of giggle about that a little bit because you got a trigger object there, but since they don't have eyes, how are they going to know what that thing even is? And my theory about that, because I haven't gotten, I mean, they haven't sat down and told me this in an interview, so to speak, but I believe that they read the video information from your eyes, or after it sends it to the brain, they're able to read that. So, in other words, if they're going to look for an object, you're saying, you know, go over there and move the red pencil. You would have to be looking at that red pencil so they're able to figure out where it is by using your visual display so that they can use that as how to get there.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Again, it's just a theory, but it's the most logical one.
Sounds like you're doing a really convoluted video game or something. Now what's interesting is I love how my mom tells me these paranormal things that happened to her out of nowhere. The latest one I just found out is her apartment. Occasionally she'll be watching TV or something, and all of a sudden she'll look up and there's a full body apparition just standing there looking at her. And then it goes out, and then it just sort of vanishes. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, one of my top topics, Mom, and you should be telling me this stuff, like, when it's happening. And yeah. it's never the same. I don't think it's ever – there are various people. She thinks – she figures they may be somebody, you know, some, like, maybe guardian angels watching over or something. But she's had other encounters – that I found out about after the fact that verified encounters I've had.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why aren't you volunteering this information? Like, oh, Jeff would find this interesting. No, you know, I would tell her something, or my, another girlfriend, had told me when I moved to California, my girlfriend stayed back east, with my mom. And, my girlfriend told me, when she went into the bathroom and no one else was home, she heard what sounded like a piano party going on in the house. And someone would be playing the piano where the piano was located. She would hear people talking, clinking glasses, like a 1950s, you know, cocktail party. But the minute she would open the door, it would all disappear. So when I went back and visited, and at one point I realized, hey, I'm in the house by myself. I went in the bathroom, and sure enough, I heard the same stuff. I heard the piano playing. I heard the people talking and the clinking glasses. I opened the door. Nothing disappears. I actually pulled the plug of the refrigerator to make sure it wasn't that. Same sounds coming up. Like, oh, I just can't explain this. This is awesome. Months later, when my girlfriend decides to move out west with me, she goes to my mom and says, are you going to be here by yourself? And she goes, oh, yeah, I'm sure. You know, maybe the ghost will play the piano for me. I'm like, oh, Mom, why aren't you telling me those things?
my own mother, God rest her soul, she died a couple years back, and interestingly enough, she never really acknowledged what my research was about, or even that she agreed with any of it, and I think she, for the most part, just put it aside. It wasn't until, I'll say, the last 6 or 7 months before she died, that she actually started taking an interest in what I was doing, even asked me to leave her a couple of my books I've written. And I believe at that point, as you may have heard, a lot of people, as they're getting ready to pass, will often get visited by their dead relatives who will come and tell them, you know, everything's going to be all right, what have you. Unfortunately, I've never been able to actually interview someone in that position because, truthfully, I know they say, well, it's not exactly nice to do that. Personally, I would, in a scientific sort of way, I would enjoy sitting down with a person who is about to go, and their relatives are sitting around in the room, and I'll ask them, you know, like, well, who's here with us, you know, and they can tell me who's with us, and then maybe I can ask that person to ask a question that I normally couldn't ask directly. I've never had that opportunity.
We got another question in chat. And that is if she wants to get your comments on a situation, whether it's directed thought or not. Sitting at home, there was a dog in her lap. They both heard the door slam. Another person who was in the house didn't hear it. And then it happened again. The dog heard it. The other person in the house heard it, but the lady who's sitting with the dog didn't hear it. So it's almost like, yeah, it was directed at certain people. It's kind of odd.
Yeah, it is. And truthfully, the EVPs that are sent to us are very directive. You can almost figure out that where they came from, which side of the room. If you have more than one recorder in the room, a lot of times I'll set up three recorders in a triangulation in the room, and often one or two of them may not get the EVP at all. One will get it, or maybe one will get it, and the other one only partially gets it, and I can kind of coordinate what area of the room that EVP was actually coming from to figure out where the entity was when they were speaking to us. It's a good practice to do, too.
But this would be a door slamming. Do you think that it still can be a directed thought at certain people? I want those people to hear it, but not that person?
That's very possible. I can't say definitely. I haven't been on the other side that long. I mean, I have died before it came back, but that's a whole different story. But not enough that I would be able to answer that question directly.
Oh, you didn't go through the orientation meeting, apparently.
No, I didn't. Truthfully, what happened was I left my body, and at the time, it was a crazy situation, and I was kind of disgusted with things. And I went to leave, and there was a person who was standing up against the wall, and as I walked towards the person, just to really to walk by him, he said, "Where are you going?" And I said, "I'm leaving. I'm tired of all this. I had enough." And he said, "You know, you're still needed. So I'd suggest you go back." And I said, "Okay, I'm dead on the floor. How am I supposed to go back?" And he said, "Well, haven't you given artificial respiration to people who have passed and you brought them back?" And I said, "Yeah, that's happened in the past." He said, "Well, why don't you do it to yourself?" I said, "Isn't that a little ridiculous?" And he said, "No, do it for yourself." And I did. And suddenly I floated right back into my body.
Wow. Whoa, did you know the person who was talking to you?
No, but he seemed familiar to him, and I suspect that he probably was my guardian angel.
Wow.
So how do we know what they're like on the other side? We keep saying that they're just energy. They don't have no mouth, no ears, no nothing. How do we know that they're not actually us to where we look just the way we are right now in the spirit, though? And we do have eyes and ears and mouth and everything.
Well, this is true. There's no way at this point to 100% answer that question accurately. I keep working on it as part of what the Paranormal Man does. I'm talking about the organization, not just me. We try to answer those questions as good as possible. Now, I'll tell you this. Through the past several years, what I have noticed is when I'm getting EVPs from people on the other side, there's also other conversation that is there. And I first noted this when I played back at EVP. I was actually at the Knickerbocker Hotel in Lionsville, Pennsylvania. And I was playing back the EVP I had recorded, and I found another voice in there. And it didn't seem to be part of what I was investigating. And the person actually said, "See him down there? We have to keep our eye on him." And I could tell that that entity was someone of authority, whether it was a high-ranking spirit or maybe it was an angel assigned to keep the other side from giving us too much information about the other side or what. I don't know. But that wasn't the only time that's happened to me. 3 weeks ago when I was at Ramblewood, an interesting thing occurred where I was investigating in the third floor. It has an area we call the cupola. It's almost like a tower-like area. And I was there investigating, and on my recording, I picked up, it sounded like a young female humming. In fact, she was going, do-do-do-do-do. That was kind of the hum she was doing. And all of a sudden, there was a deep male voice that entered into this thing where she stopped humming, and he said, "Who is doing the testing?" And then she said, "Herman." Now, I know you guys know my first name is Herman. Some people do. All the people at that building were new, first time going in that building. No one there knew me as Herman or knew my first name was Herman. So I knew it was not anyone who had said that. And everybody always calls me Mike or the professor. Some people call me Vigo because I look like the guy from Ghostbusters. But this kind of verified the fact that it was a different entity speaking. And the good part about this unusual bit of recording I got, after she said my name, that Herman was doing the testing, the, I guess I call them overseers, he didn't comment. So obviously, I haven't crossed the line, so to speak, yet. And truthfully, I'm going to be honest with you. Anytime I do a session, I always pray to our Lord, asking him that if I go too far, give me a nudge, let me know that I'm crossing a line with my questions, or if I happen to learn something that is not supposed to be given out, let me know before I go poof. Because I have a feeling that if somebody actually crosses the line with a question or an answer that they're not really supposed to know, that's when I say, well, we're going to grab him now. And that I really believe that can happen.
Wow. Well, I think
you don't want to end up in a heavenly Guantanamo Bay.
Yes, exactly. You know, so I try to be careful what I say and how I say it. And I truthfully, I have always treated the spirits as people because, after all, they are souls and they were people at one time. Now the entity of who they were is what I'm speaking to. So I want to give them that much respect. And truthfully, I've learned that by giving them that respect, I always get it back. And they treat me likewise with very, very much respect. And I really think that a lot of people have to take the time to understand that because you don't want to antagonize them. I really don't believe in cursing at them to get them to talk. If they don't want to talk, they don't want to talk. You know, let's say they're on a permanent vacation. They don't have to stop for us. So we need to give them that much respect.
Well, I think it's about time for us to take a break because we done went a little past, but we're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and I'm going to let Jeff take us out. I will bring us back. So, Jeff, why don't you go ahead and take us out?
Yes, you're listening to The Paranormal View on, I was going to say parahappynext.com. Now I have to learn the new thing. With your hosts, Henry Foister, Ceiling Cat Barbara Duncan, and myself, Jeffrey Gould, with tonight's guest, Mike Stevenson, of the Paranormal Man Group. So stay tuned for more of The Paranormal View after the break.
It's always time for the dead to shine in Hollywood. The legendary Dearly Departed Tours has stepped up their ghostly game by offering the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends walking tour. Dearly departed has long been an orb of hope in the paranormal world, having been featured on television's Haunted History and Haunted Collector. Their terrible tales have been made infamous in Marla Brooks' The Ghosts of Hollywood books. The new Ghosts and Legends tour is a 10-block, 70-minute dusk time stroll down the boulevard of broken dreams. You'll be guided through the golden age of Hollywood and see where the unearthly Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney, and the calamitous Black Dahlia are still said to linger. You'll see Hollywood's gothic hotels, legendary theaters, and restaurants, never forgetting their permanent occupants. No stranger to investigations, Dearly Departed Tours has first-hand knowledge of some of these hauntings. For details of the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour, find Dearly Departed Tours on Facebook, dearlydepartedtours.com, or call 1-855-600-DEAD.
Are you psychic? Do you often have dreams that come true? Do you have an interest in hypnosis or astrology? If you'd like to learn more about classes, events, and books on metaphysics, then go to our website, www.theartofmediumship. This is Elaine Kosmaskis, director of the New England School of Metaphysics and author of The Art of Mediumship.
So, Tim, around here at Para-X, we're considered oldies because we've been here so long, right?
You know, yeah, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with oldies. In fact, you know what? I really love oldies.
Well, yeah, me too. I mean, it kind of takes me back to a time when my cauldron had training wheels and the Black Cat Lounge was called the Black Kitten Lounge. Sometimes I miss the good old days.
Sis, there's no need to miss them at all, because all you have to do is turn on and listen to Rock with the Shock.
Rock with the Who?
No, 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 little sis. No, 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 not the Who. The Shock.
Hi, I am John Zaffis, and you are listening to Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hi, this is Mike from Mr. G's Ice Cream Store in Gettysburg, the most haunted ice cream store in town. Stop in and see us next time you're around. We feature 16 flavors of homemade ice cream made right here in the store. Look forward to seeing you.
My name is Greg Bakken. I'm a writer, a producer, and a paranormal investigator. My favorite way of communicating with spirits is through using the spirit box, also known as a ghost box. I invite you to listen to me every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Central for interviews with people in the paranormal community and beyond. Plus, I will also include as much of my spirit box evidence as I can during my show.
My name is Greg. Can you say Greg? Can you say Jeff? Greg.
Join me every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Central Time for Minnesota Ghost Box, only on Para-X Radio.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
There's magic brewing behind the scenes at Stirring the Cauldron. A new exclusive line of incense and essential oils created by master alchemist Jimmy Darling at Babylon Gardens Apothecary. The Stirring the Cauldron essential oil brings you knowledge and success. Use it in all forms of spell work or wear it to create a perfect aspect of the self. The Witch's Oracle incense enhances veil wisdom and prediction when used in readings with Marla Brooks' Witch's Oracle deck. But we've found it to be an extremely powerful tool in any form of divination. Create the ultimate connection to the divine when using this custom blend. The newest offering in the Stirring the Cauldron line is Love Potion number 9 3/4. This isn't your average love potion. It's a Love Thyself potion of attraction, which empowers you to draw not only love and romance into your life, but anything else your heart desires. Love Potion number 9 3/4 is available in both essential oil and incense forms. To find out more about the Stirring the Cauldron line of products, please go to www.marlabrooks.com and click on the Incense and Oils tab.
And welcome back, everybody, right here to the Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for taking time to be with us tonight. We have with us Jeffrey Gould.
Hello, hello.
And howdy, Barbara folks. Duncan. And we have listeners from everywhere, don't we?
We sure do. And they're all over the United States, plus the United Kingdom, Ireland, Australia, Manila, Singapore. And our good friend Unknown is back.
All right. The Unknown. That is the dark side of the moon, by the way.
We keep telling you there's no such thing as a dark side.
Well, it's all dark on one side.
No, it revolves. The moon still revolves. It's the far side of the moon.
Well, it's still, that's the dark side. The far side is the dark side. If it rotates, there's still a dark side.
And the dark side still has cookies. Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. Of course, that's only if you're going where the clock is, broken clock is right twice a day. Yeah. Concept.
Well, we want to welcome back Mike Stevenson.
Yeah, I'm right here.
You are in the chat room, right, Mike?
Yes.
Are you in the chat room that has the sound at the bottom of the chat window?
I don't see that.
Okay, is there
a blue screen?
Is there a big red bar at the top?
No.
Then it's down below the chat window. Down below where you type at, there should be a bar down there that has the sound in it.
I'm not seeing that. Maybe they don't want me to speak.
Or they all want to.
The sound is coming back into the chat room, so I know what that is.
Okay.
Okay, it had a speaker. I seen a speaker, so I just clicked on it to turn that off.
Speaker all the way over to the right.
Well, you're talking about the speaker that's at the end of where all the funny faces are, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
All that does is mute the sounds when somebody types in the chat room. That don't mute the sound from the chat room. There should down below that even there should be
actually at the top right is a pause button. That's the only way I've been able to figure out how to shut off the new sound.
Depends on which room you're in.
Chat room. How many chat rooms do we have?
You have the old chat room. If you go into para-x.com.
No, I'm in the new chat room. That's
why it's up at the top. The old room, it's still at the bottom.
Well, I got a blue screen here of the chat, and it says, welcome to the Para-X chat room.
Okay. And if you keep going all the way down, if you're in that room, go all the way up, you should see a red bar across the top that shows you chat now, shows, schedule, and all that.
Yes, I see that.
All right, there should be over toward the right-hand side, there is a little turquoise thing with a white arrow on it, triangle?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Click on that, and it turns the sound off.
Okay. There we go. It's now giving me the pause bar.
That's it.
That's it.
You're good now.
All right. I know a lot about EVP, but I don't know much about the chat room.
All right. You're in the right place then. So
all right.
wanna welcome you back, and we got lots of good questions and stuff to still more here to talk about. Let's see. Do spirits retain their memory?
I believe they do, and I say that because I have done particular types of ghost investigations, called ghost excavating. It's kind of, I think there's a Chinese method of it. I don't know what their name for it is. But primarily what you're doing is you're recreating an incident in time. And everyone who's involved with it actually has a part. They're actually pretending to be a certain person. And they're having a conversation that's, you know, the information about whatever it is they're discussing is written down somewhere. So, you know, we can talk about this because we have that much information. And when you do this, I have found that the spirits kind of get involved with it. If there's a word, a name, or some phrase that wasn't recorded that happened in their actual life timeline, sometimes they'll enter it in there. Like, you could end up saying a word or a sentence that you weren't even thinking of going to say, and it's actually them planting that thought to aid in recreating the correct conversation. So with that, I'm certain that they must retain that information because they're able to go through it with you. And often I notice I've told stories about things, and I found the more accurate the story is, the closer they'll seem to get to you. And like the outcome will often be where the temperature in the room will start dropping as if you just walked into a deep freeze.
So it's kind of role-playing in a way to get them to or kick in a memory almost.
Exactly, okay. Exactly. And they often do this with this type of investigating, that they'll add information. And often it's an answer to a question that you're not able to come up with because maybe it was never recorded or someone didn't know. And the only, let's say, witness to whatever case might be, whether it's been a crime or a happening or whatever, maybe it was a good event, that extra person may chime in and may feed you that information. So you end up actually saying words or phrases that you're not even realizing you're saying them because they're interacting with you.
Okay. Go psychotherapy.
Yes.
So if they're storing memory, that means then that they have to be able to have a memory by re-adding it to it.
Correct. And I'm certain it's probably in some means part of the energy that they have. I don't know, or I can't really say for certain how a spirit retains the memory and the thoughts, but if they are pure energy and they can create magnetic waves, it's very possible that maybe a portion of them has a magnetic flux that is stabilized. It's like a tape recording. It's already imprinted on a tape, and as is in their case, here it is. It's imprinted in a portion of that energy, a memory.
Okay,
I got a question for you.
All right.
Why do some believe that a spirit has to use the investigator's energy to move things or to speak? The spirit is not a battery. It doesn't have to be charged up. So why do they think that?
Well, at times when you're in an investigation and you may feel drained, they do, if they're close enough to you that they can attach to you, and I'm not talking about directly attaching, I'm talking about to siphon off some of your energy. Everybody has energy, and we give off energy in a room. Sometimes it's even in, let's say, heat waves. So this energy they need sometimes to be able to communicate, where they need an extra amount of energy, because what I've come to realize is for them actually to talk to us by sending us electromagnetic pulses, that uses energy. And I know they don't want to deplete themselves. So they need to go on something, and they usually will take a person, or they may even be close to a receptacle or a circuit breaker box or something like that. So you'll find that a lot of times they're in that area because they need to add extra energy in order to be able to talk with us, because it does take a good bit of energy, I'm certain, to send us the EVP we're getting. Because remember, actually, the EVPs are not one whole word, like we may say a word. They're sending it out in pulses. So if the word, let's say that they're trying to say, has three syllables, it may take three pulses of energy to actually give us that EVP.
And the same would hold true for, say, poltergeist activity. They would need that energy just to be able to, like, assume, use that wavelength to move or activate enough energy in that can, tin can, to move it.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. They need that energy. And there are some cases, too, and I firmly believe this, that some people actually can create a poltergeist if they have enough energy in themselves that it spills over. And it's often been said that, and when studies have been made on poltergeist, that people who, for some reason or another, have a psychological imbalance where their regular communication skills aren't up to par, let's say. They have a buildup of energy, and when this energy spills over, it can kinetically move objects or even create a spirit.
Well, wasn't there an experiment, I think in England in either the 50s or 40s, where a group of people essentially worked towards creating a thought form of a spirit that never existed? They actually dreamed up its name and the backstory, and they were able to actually communicate with this essentially fictionalized entity.
Yes, yes. And that in itself is a form of a poltergeist.
So they were essentially harnessing their own telekinesis without realizing it.
Exactly, exactly. And as most of the studies on the poltergeist go, that's precisely what's happening. And like I said, if they have a buildup of energy, this can spill over and create a poltergeist, or maybe not even the poltergeist itself, but actually kinetically move an object.
Yes, and somebody in the chat just wrote, Philip the Tulpa. It's called a tulpa, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do have a question from the chat. Wait a second here, somewhere. Here it is. They want to know, what about the multiverse theory and bleeding through into other neighbor universes?
Well, when I talk about an EVP, I always talk about the fact that it is a multiple burst, if that's what they're asking about. As far as us bleeding over into, or them bleeding over to another physical state, I'm not fully abreast on that. That's another area that I have to do some more study on. And really, that's kind of part of the quantum theory, where we have other states that are things that, let's say, people are living in another state of existence, maybe even in the same space that we're occupying, but because it's in a different time frame, we don't notice them and they don't notice us. And I also feel that a lot of times when we see a spirit, like out of the corner of our eye, move, it's because we've managed to, for that moment, our eyes actually focused on something slipping between the different areas and different time frames of this, you know, this universe, the quantum theory universe.
So you've heard of the holographic universe theory, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it was almost sounding like that's where you were going with that, in that they were accessing a different aspect of the liquid hologram, in which it's almost as though we're living within a computer simulation.
Right, Right. I think it was Dr. Freud who once said even that, who is to know for certain whether the dream we have at night is the reality or the life we think we're living is the reality? So which is it? Which is the dream and which is reality? Can we really determine it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of my brother and my longtime concepts is the fact that when we're dreaming, we just go along with whatever happens. Doesn't matter whether or not a dromedary walks through your room while you're talking. But when we're in our, quote, waking state, we always question reality. So why do we not question when we're sleeping?
Exactly. You know, what's interesting is it seems that in some cases you can actually see the dream by adding certain things to the dream or taking them out. It depends on the level of dream an individual can do. But in most cases, like you said, you just go along with the flow. And, you know, who's to say which is the reality?
Why do we think that spirits hangs out in just one building or one state or one country? Do they move around?
I'm certain that they move around. The one thing for certain is that spirits are not confined to our time frame. And the proof of this kind of is when, if you're having a conversation with an entity and you say, well, I have to leave now, I'll be back at 5 p.m., can we continue this conversation at that time? Well, they may say yes, and you go back at 5 p.m., and sure enough, they're right there. Well, to them, that instant between the time you left and the time you arrived back, there was no time loss or time difference between that to them. So there was no necessity for them to go find a spiritual watch, so to speak, because they are moving about without the confines of time.
I remember once hearing an EVP where the comment simply was, time is different here.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I've had something similar to that when I've questioned, and that's what helped me draw this conclusion that time is not an important factor to them. And in some cases, the spirit you may be speaking with, when you say time, they might not even know what you're talking about because it's totally different to them. Time is actually a man-made field that was created for us to be able to do things in a certain order. And they don't have that restriction.
So can it be in two places at one time?
I believe so. Since there is no time element involved, I really believe that they have the ability to be in multiple places at the same time. And that's truthfully why I also believe that when you see them out of the corner of your eye, you're seeing them because they're passing through our particular time frame at that moment. And again, the fact that we're seeing that a corner of eye, I think that we only see them that way is because our eye actually constantly moves. There's a dead spot in our eye. It's the area around where the retina actually attaches to the eyeball. And you see nothing there. It's like a blank hole. And our brain fills that in with the colors or pictures of what the eye is seeing in the other parts. So in order to compensate for that area that's nothing, our eye will actually jump back and forth so that it can receive data to put in that blank spot. When we're looking at it out of the corner of our eye is not moving. It's just like a camera. When it takes a picture and we catch something, it's because the camera is not moving. It is taking a stationary photograph of that moment in time. And I really believe that's why we sometimes catch a photograph of a spirit, because the camera is not held back by time either. It takes that moment at that moment.
Oh, so it can be two places at, they can be in two places at one time. They can also be in two times in one place.
Yes, I really do believe that. And all these different things that happen, as far as I'm concerned, is the proof of that.
Okay, so you, taking time out of the equation, as it's not really a dimensional concept. Okay.
Right. I mean, look at it as you're driving down a road at 60 miles an hour, and the car next to you is in another lane. They're driving down a road at 60 miles an hour, and if you look over at them and they look over at you, they're seeing you standing still. But in truth, both of you are moving at 60 miles per hour. But because you are linked in the same time frame for the moment, it stands still.
Yeah, everything else is moving.
Exactly. Everything else moves except you and the other party.
I saw a great bit of graffiti once that said, "Time isn't real, only clocks are."
That's true. And even a stop clock is right twice a day.
Right twice a day, huh?
Yeah.
Unless the numbers are broken.
Right.
Now, you were talking before we got on the air about an incident in the tanning basement. And if you could go through this, but I'd also like to ask you, as part of that, is if there's ever going to be such a field as paraforensic criminology, where you're going to be able to go back and solve crimes via the method that you're using now.
Mm-hmm. I truly believe that we're kind of edging towards that direction. Using, like I said, the ghost excavating method and putting together data based on not just the facts that are recorded, but maybe even a little bit of psychic information, which police today even use some psychic information often, adding that to what facts you have and filling in blanks. And using all that together, there is an amount of forensics that in looking up this information. Like I said, I'm working on, actually I'm writing a book about the deaths of these two girls. One was age 16, one was actually age 25. Both were killed. Until recently, though, I didn't know how the younger one met her death. I had some ideas, and there was a hypothesis involved, but recently an evil spirit, actually confessed to me that he killed the other girl too, and that happened like at 4:30 in the morning, where he yelled it out to me. With that information and the using forensic methods of putting together data, I've been working on, I won't call this a cold case murder, but it's actually a frozen case murder, because the people involved in it, this incident of their deaths happened approximately 160 years ago.
Not quite cold case, but...
Yeah, that's pretty cool, 160 years, so...
I think what we're going to do is go ahead and take our last break. And I'm going to let Jeff take us out, and I will bring us back. So then we can continue on with this fascinating interview. So, Jeff? Is Jeff still here? Did I lose
him? Yeah. No, it helps if I hit the mute. I did a cat and I didn't hit the mute. You're listening to The Paranormal View on ParaXRadioNetwork.com with your hosts, Henry Foister, Ceiling Cat Barbara Duncan, and myself, Jeffrey Gould, with tonight's guest, Mike Stevenson. So stay tuned for more of The Paranormal View after the break.
For the light to shine so brightly, the darkness must be present. Tune in every Monday at 10 o'clock to Dawn Sunrising on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Rosalind Bound, and you are listening to The Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network.
There's a darkness in the hallway. Voices that seem to come from nowhere. Alone at night, there is a feeling that something or someone is near. Where can you go? Who can you turn to? Para-X Radio and the all-new Para-X Vision can help. Our knowledgeable host and expert guest can help you find some answers and take a glimpse into the unknown. Para-X Radio and Para-X Vision, programming for the open mind.
My name is Greg Bakken. I'm a writer, a producer, and a paranormal investigator. My favorite way of communicating with spirits is through using the spirit box, also known as a ghost box. I invite you to listen to me every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Central for interviews with people in the paranormal community and beyond. Plus, I will also include as much of my spirit box evidence as I can during my show.
My name is Greg. Can you say Greg? Can you say Jeff?
Jeff.
Join me every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Central Time for Minnesota Ghost Box, only on Para-X Radio.
I found it at last! Marla's sacred cauldron. This is the legendary artifact that has been whispered about in hushed tones for hundreds of years, and now it's mine! All mine!
Who dares defile the sanctity of my castle walls? Step away from the cauldron, you impertinent, muddy metal maltworm.
Never! I've spent half my lifetime trying to discover your age-old secret of stirring the cauldron!
Oh, for Merlin's sake, that's no deep, dark secret. Just tune into the Para-X Radio Network Thursday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern for more cauldron stirring than you can shake a wand at.
Oh, well, in that case, I guess I don't need to take up any more of your time, so I guess I'll be going!
Not just yet. We've got a little unfinished business to take care of.
That's Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Mike from Mr. G's Ice Cream in Gettysburg. You're listening to the Paranormal View on Para-X Radio Network.
Rhett, where are you going?
I'm going back to the Paranormal View, back where I belong.
Please take me with you.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rhett, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs and all kinds of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No!
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rhett, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear...
Fine.
You gotta be kidding.
But it's the Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, and Barbara Duncan. Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
And welcome back, everybody, right here to the Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. Well, thank everybody for taking the time to be with us tonight.
Nice edit there, by the way.
Oh, you like that? Smooth, wasn't it?
I was waiting like, oh, we forgot. Oh, we took it out. Okay.
Yeah, I took the time to take care of the intro and outro both with all that stuff. So with that, I want to welcome back our guest, Mike Stevenson. So, Mike, welcome back.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. I'm very happy to be here, and as always, I thoroughly enjoy chatting with you guys.
Of course. We're a great bunch.
Of course, you're the best.
Now, before we get started back on all the questions, did you have a good time at Gettysburg?
I had a wonderful time, wonderful time. I thoroughly enjoyed the investigation that we were doing, and I'm looking forward to doing it again wherever we decide to go. Everyone there was grand. I thoroughly enjoyed meeting with some new people, meeting some old people, and having a wonderful, wonderful time investigating. So it was a true blessing to work with everyone once again. And like I said, I can't wait to do it again because, I mean, everybody who went, wonderful time. I know they did. I know I did. And I'm sure everybody was pleased with what evidence they managed to get.
I think seems like every time we go, though, we all have a good time, whether we actually capture any evidence or not. Lucky if we do, but if we don't, I'm still there to have a good time with meeting up with everybody. So that's the big thing, just being able to meet up with everybody. Oh, and while I'm thinking about it right now, if anyone wants to win a ticket to go to the Mid-South Convention, I'm going to ask a question, and you can send an email to us, and you answer the question, you can win a ticket. I'll get your name and email address. You can only win one per household, so you can't have one for everybody in the house to go. They're non-refundable. I mean, in other words, you can't take and cash them in and get money back for them because there's no money value to them. You're just winning a ticket to be able to get into the place. So I'm going to ask a question, and you can send an answer over to theparanormalview@gmail.com, and you don't have to be in the chat room to do that, no matter where you're listening from. I'm going to ask, what city is the Mid-South Paranormal Convention held in? So if you got the answer for that and you want to win a ticket, send it over to our email site. Barbara's watching that, and she'll let me know if we have any takers on that. So, yeah, they're standing by. I tried to get a cramp. We don't want that.
No.
So, anyway, getting back to our conversation, and this is one for the technical side of you. How reliable is all the recorders and gadgets that we use to communicate with the spirits?
Well, I use certain ones, and I do that for a reason, and mainly because of the results I get. So there are quite a few out there that are very useful. For instance, now, when I want to do a direct communication, whereas I'll be getting answers to my questions directly, I'll use the RT-EVP device. I understand that they're hard to get at this point. And it's funny, a lot of people tend to think that just by plugging in an earphone to their recorder, that they're creating an RT unit, and that's not really correct. If you don't mind me elaborating a little bit, when you do that to a standard recorder, the only thing you're doing is hearing what is there at the microphone at that moment, but you're not hearing what actually is recorded at any moment. The RT unit, which stands for real time, by the way, is actually two units in one. It's both a recorder and a playback unit that operates simultaneously. So when you're hearing through your earphones what the RT unit is picking up, often it is delayed you can set the delay anywhere from 1 to 6 seconds. And you're actually hearing what's already recorded. And for some reason, you don't always hear through when we're talking through a microphone, or they're talking through the microphone. You don't always hear what actually is being recorded on the unit, whether it be digitally or electronically with a tape of some kind, a cassette. So that was the concept behind the people that made it, and it seems to make a difference. And also, it tends to have adjustments on it that you can set its record volume much higher than with most standard devices. So that's mainly the one unit I rely on quite a bit. But I also explore the Ovilus. I've had good results with it, just as there's a lot of people out there that use the Ghost Box. I don't use a Ghost Box much. I have used them. Sometimes I'll get something, sometimes I won't. But the Ovilus seems to always want to have something to say to me. So those are my two main devices I use, and they work very well for me.
Now, there's a new trend out there, and I want to get your opinion on the Kinect system.
Yes. A lot of people are talking about it. I have some of the equipment to utilize that hooked up to my laptop. At the moment, I'm having, for those that are computer savvy, I'm having driver problems getting the drivers that I do have. I probably have to change some different drivers to get the visual portion of the Kinect unit to actually start giving me the visual display. Once I resolve that issue, I'll be able to utilize the Kinect unit without an enormous amount of money, and just to walk around with a tablet that's going to make the Kinect unit work. The good thing about it is there's actually several different sensors on it. It has a three-dimensional method of receiving visual. And the good thing about that is that if an entity is moving about, and remember, they're not restricted to, as I heard of Star Trek once said, ugly big bag of water. So as such, they're not confined to a space that our bodies are. And because of that, they may move in and out or move like a drop of colored water in plain water, where it's going to change shape and what have you. So they're not restricted like that. And because of that, the Kinect unit is able to interpret what it's looking at and give you a visual display of that effect. And also, if it happens to be in some type of, we'll call it human form, the Kinect unit will create a stick figure for you. And I've seen them actually in operation. I've seen them where a person was, let's say, asking an entity a question that happened to be in the picture. Like, for instance, can you raise your right arm? Well, in a sense, they don't have an arm, but I've seen the stick figure actually moves as if they raise an arm. So they are moving about, I guess, in a similar fashion to what they were able to do when they actually had a body with them. So I think it's a very good tool. I hope to get my unit running soon. I know several people who have them, several people who use them, and they get good results with them. So I'm all for exploring that. We at the Paranormal Man organization are working on it. Like I say, we've hit a little snag, but we hope to resolve that soon. But yes, that's a very good device.
Yeah, there are numerous videos on YouTube of people using the Kinect system to have little suddenly stick figures showing up and moving around like just little invisible people right next to the people who are sitting there.
Yes, yeah, I've even seen one that looked like maybe a little dog that walked up to a person. because that was the shape of the stick figure. And I thought that was rather interesting, because a lot of people say, oh, animals don't come back as ghosts or whatever. Obviously, they must, and the Kinex device actually proved that fact.
Well, our previous co-host, Kat, has, and even Henry, has had ghost cat experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And ghost animal experiences.
Right. So, you know, that pretty much confirms the fact that it's not limited to human spirits. Obviously, animals are with us in that category.
Okay, I got a question from the chat room. They want to know, what is your opinion on dark topics like demons? Like, where do they come from?
Well, demons, and if you go look at the Bible, you get a direct answer. Demons are fallen angels. They still are angels. They're now categorized as demons because they didn't want to follow the rules of God. Likewise, and this I take as a misconception, we often call Lucifer a devil. Actually, he's a demon. He is a fallen angel. Only we can become devils. So if you die, you're an evil person, and you die, you will be a devil, because that's what you did in life, and you will remain that. And it even tells you in the Bible, for instance, that if you stake your life on this life and this is what you want, God can grant it to you, send you right back to here, but as a spirit, so you'll be back on earth. And of course, this may be what a lot of the spirits we speak to actually are. They're earthbound spirits that felt so much of this life as being important to them, that if that's what you want, that's what you're going to get. And I really do believe that.
Okay, you are certified, that you sent out the thing that you sent to us. You're certified in both commercial and government electronics.
That's correct.
What is government electronics?
Well, when I use the word government electronic, what that's talking about really is an FCC certification. I am a licensed broadcast engineer governed by the Federal Communication Commission.
So, in other words, if we had problems getting set up to broadcast, you'd be able to fix it, right?
Well, that's true. That's absolutely true. See that? You got yourself another hand.
I was getting on it.
Me and my big mouth.
So when you do broadcasting, what do you use to broadcast? Do you broadcast over like the internet like this, like we do?
Well, at this point, I no longer broadcast, but I used to do a lot of service work in two-way radio for both commercial and government agencies. So that was pretty much the broadcast I'm doing, but actually repairing the equipment. And at one time, I was an engineer for several broadcast stations, both television and radio.
So they probably didn't use setups like what we use.
Similar. When we did the live broadcast in Gettysburg, they use a lot of very similar stuff to what we were using. The mixers and what have you, and the microphones, is pretty much the same thing. Doing a remote broadcast, usually it would be a device connected to a telephone line, and it would be transmitted down the telephone line to a location. Some of the newer systems they do have, they use a satellite link, usually with a broadcast truck. So that's kind of the newer way. And the older way is pretty much exactly what you do.
Now, the question then is, in your experience and doing investigations, has anybody ever tried to fool you by putting amplifiers in walls or trying to fool you with electronic equipment?
I've not encountered that. And I usually check for things like that. I have not myself encountered that. I know there has been there's been several shows on TV where some of our TV personalities have gone to investigate a place only to find that the place that is supposedly haunted had been rigged to have objects either move or make noises. I guess I've been lucky in that sense that I have never had that situation happen to me.
Now, how would you go by looking for things like that?
Well, I guess you have to have an equal devious mind. Not that I'm a devious person, mind you, but if you suspect something is too real, then you want to investigate the mere fact that it is or is not real because someone may be trying to fool you. And I know there's been times people have done this. There used to be a show on TV, I can't remember what it was called anymore, where they put somebody in a family in a house, and they claim that the whole thing is haunted. It may or may not be, but quite often there'll be certain things rigged to scare the bejeebies out of you, and it was all just for that purpose, for the entertainment of the TV show.
One of my guilty pleasures is watching The Bachelor, and they had an episode where he took a group date to an alleged haunted house down in New Orleans, and I'm like, oh, cool, there are a lot of actual haunted houses. And it turned out to be a rigged place that was horribly, overly rigged. And it was most enraging episodes. And normally I tweet little jokes during the show, but I just pointed out how just insane and out of integrity that episode was to people who actually investigate, you know, actual hauntings. So they couldn't get to a real haunted house. They had to fake one. What the heck?
Exactly. But there are people that do that. I remember an episode, for instance, of the Ghost Hunters, and they were, I think it was on the Queen Mary, and supposedly the sheets were being pulled down the bed, and what they found out was that if you go to the next room, go through the walk-in closet, it will actually exit into the walk-in closet of the room they were investigating, and someone could sneak up out of camera range and pull down the bed linens, making it look like that there was a haunting going on, when in fact that was entirely rigged.
Want to smack people when they do
that. Exactly.
I mean, when I was on the Queen Mary, as I say, I had a ghost dog bark in my face. I had woken up in my cabin. I had someone in the room, so he heard it as well. And as we were discussing it, about a minute later, I was standing by the cabin door, and all of a sudden, at the door, somebody crashed into it on the bottom half of it, as though someone had tripped or was pushed, was hitting the door as they went down to the deck. And I threw open the door, and there was absolutely no one in the entire empty hallway. And we were just like, ooh, that's so cool. But there was no way it could be rigged, because there was nothing physical hitting the door.
Right. So you obviously were lucky enough to have a real happening happen to you that they weren't faking. But in the case I was describing there at the Queen Mary, it was obviously one of the crew doing something to deceive them just so they could have something happen. And, I usually shy away from people that try stuff like that, because it kind of ruins the integrity of us people who are seriously investigating this to find serious answers to questions.
Yeah.
Now, in your experience, with most people, I assume that they don't welcome the idea of their house being haunted. Do you have people that are looking forward to saying, oh, I live in a haunted house?
I found a few that do, yeah, they'll say that. In some cases, they are haunted. In some cases, they're trying to say it, but it ain't really happening, but they do it for attention. But, yes, there are some people that enjoy speaking with ghosts. Well, let's say overseas in England, for instance, in Scotland, there's a lot of castles that are still in use, and there are spirits that hang around. And if you talk to these people, they'll tell you, oh, yeah, Joe the Spirit, he comes and visits us every time we have dinner in the dining hall. They accept that. They have a different outlook entirely to spirits that we do. We look at it as mostly entertainment. They don't. They look at it as, well, you were here first, so you're entitled to be here. I'm actually the intruder, so to speak. And they learn to get along with a lot of spirits. And even like I said, England and Scotland, you don't hear as many cases where the spirit is out to get you, so to speak, because they've learned to coexist. And there again, it goes back to what I was saying way back in the beginning. It's a matter of respect. And if you respect them, they will respect you. I could cite an example. I was in the area in PA. I'm trying to think of the doggone name of it right now. It's where they had the big fire underground, the coal fire. And there's graveyards about the only thing left there. There's like six graveyards. I was in the Russian graveyard, and I was trying to see if I could get anything on my EVP recorder. I was using the RT in it at the time. And I said, does anybody here want to speak to me? Well, I wasn't getting any answers. And then I said, well, to tell you the truth, I'm not Russian. However, I am of Polish descent. Therefore, I am Slavic. Therefore, we are kind of cousins. So being that, is there any message that I could deliver to someone for you? And on my RT, and I got first, it was a little bit of a grunt, and this gentleman spoke, and what he said was, my time has ended, which to me was a very respectful way of answering me to tell me that he doesn't want to be bothered or they don't want to be bothered, but because I was being respectful to them, they respectfully answered the question, and I said, thank you very much, I will leave everyone now. And I packed up and left.
Now, is it more of a cultural thing, too? Because you don't hear a lot of talk of demonic activity in say, most of the European haunts. It's usually just, oh, that's somebody who used to live here several years ago and not a demonic entity.
Right. I agree with that 100%. And I think that the involvement you have with the spirits, I think they kind of like protect the area. It's like, you know, we don't want the bad guys here. I get along with these people, leave them alone, because obviously they can converse with them a lot easier than we can, sort of kind of on their own level, so to speak. So, yeah, I agree with that. It is true that we don't have as much of that going on. And I really think it has a lot to do with the rapport you have with the other side.
Okay. I got a question from the chat room from Sai. And he wants to know, do you find that in residential homes that ghosts tend to hang out in certain areas? And if so, where? Attic, cellar, closets, bedroom? Where might you find them?
Well, often they're, if they died in a certain place, then they often seem to remain in that general area. So I find that's the first place I would normally expect them to be. There are some that hang around in attics. Not because there's anything particular about the attic, but it may be the only place they can go that normally we won't be bothering them.
Hmm.
You don't abide by the old adage that cemeteries are haunted, do you?
Well, not entirely. And, you know, it, like I said, I was at this Russian graveyard where they did, the gentleman did speak to me, but I haven't found them haunted. A lot of people say, well, they're dead and there's no means of maintaining an energy level, so that's why they don't hang around in the graveyard. That could be true. But there again, I really think that dead or not, we like company. No one wants to be totally alone. So in general, that's probably why we don't get a whole lot of things, evil things or even good things going on in a graveyard. Because of the fact that it's not an area where they want to hang around.
Now, if you can go wherever you want to once you die and become a spirit, why wouldn't you want to go and, like, hang out at Disney World or something like that?
Well, what I have been able to deduce from doing investigations I have, basically, most spirits, I say most because I'm not certain if all of these follow this rule of thumb, they tend to duplicate or hang around with areas that are involved with their memory. So if they've never been to Disney World, it wouldn't entertain them to go there. And truthfully, I don't see a spirit taking a ride on a Ferris wheel or anything, you know, for fun. You know, or you have one, you go through the tunnel of love and the guy next to you is dead, you know. You don't usually find that. And I think it's just because it's not their cup of tea. But they like to rely on their memories as to what their life was. And that's also why I believe that and have found, actually, that they like storytelling. So especially if it's something that they're familiar with, it could be a happening or an event. And if you're sitting there talking about it, they'll listen in because it's like reactivating that memory for them. So they tend to stay with what their life was prior to.
Yeah, Jeff can attest to this. Disneyland, I believe the underground parts of the tunnels there are quite haunted.
Both the underground tunnels and the Haunted Mansion. And oddly enough.
That's at Disneyland, not Disney World, yeah. Right?
They're both. I think they're at both, but yeah. But I know that the Disneyland versions are definitely supposed to be haunted. But it's one of those things where... It's one of those things where the employees are ordered, you cannot speak of this kind of a thing.
Well, underground in both of them, their places, underground's an entire city. There's things going on underground that the spectators or visitors to the parks would never realize. So there's a whole city underground, and I'm certain there's probably spirits down there simply because of the fact that it's already has a lot of people doing a lot of things. There may even be relatives or maybe even former employees there. So they hang out there simply because that's what they used to do. So I can see that. It kind of makes sense to me why they would do it.
Now, you work in a lot of things. What is some of the new things that you're doing with video?
Well, lately, like I said, I'm still trying to get my Kinect device to work, but I've been using more thermal imagers and full-spectrum cameras to photograph places I'm investigating. And a lot of times I used to just take, let's say, repetitious photographs of a place hoping to get an entity, and often I would, but... I found that utilizing a movie camera, I have a better chance of getting something because In standard mode, a flash camera can only actually reproduce a picture probably every 6 to 8 seconds, I think is the fastest most of them will do, unless you have one of the really expensive jobs. Then, of course, you would get a repetitious picture. But I using it in actual movie mode, they're taking 30 frames of picture per second. So if something's actually occurring in between those times, you have a better chance of picking it up. So I use camera, video movie recorders more often now than I used to for that reason.
And all on tripod, I would assume. Are you one of those people that investigates in the dark, or do you think that it really matters whether or not you go lights on, lights off?
Most of the time, I will do it in the dark. There are times when I will investigate with lights on. But the one thing to consider, truthfully, it's a misconception about lights on, lights off. The light doesn't affect them. If it were, we'd see them running around in front of us, but it doesn't affect them for that reason. So having the lights on or off is not going to affect that. But the real reason, the basic reason behind turning off the lights is because when a light is on, it's completing an electrical circuit to light that bulb. So the wiring in the walls or what have you will create a magnetic field. And remember now, most of the equipment people use, like even a K2, for instance, will pick up almost any type of magnetic flux. And all wiring, when it's completed circuit, like with lights on, is creating a magnetic field. So it will give you false readings. So that's really the reason behind lights out. It's not that the ghosts move around in the dark, and if you're in the dark, you can move around with them better. That has nothing to do with it. It's more over keeping from having false readings. So the real reason behind a lot of this is not often taught to someone who's in training. They just assume that you're supposed to do lights out. Truthfully, most of the photographs I've actually caught of entities were actually done between the hours of 10:30 and 12:30 in the morning afternoon. So it's actually daylight, and sometimes outside I've gotten them in daylight. So the hour in that respect has nothing to do with it. The lights on or off has nothing to do with it. Again, like I said, its main purpose is to help keep you from having false readings.
From that same standpoint, because radios actually are receivers, and the only reason they're turned off, you're still receiving frequencies. They're just not broadcasting. The on-off switch does is turn on the speaker. Do you actually want to go around and turn off or unplug certain devices so that they also don't interfere?
If they're actually drawing current, like you talk about a radio or TV, in most cases, if they can be turned on with a remote, there is a live active circuit that is active. And again, just like a light bulb on, it is creating a circuit there. And yes, it would be creating a EMF pulse that our equipment often will pick up. So in that case, yeah, I might unplug those items. And additionally, a lot of our instruments are affected by radio transmissions. So I tend to shy away from using walkie-talkies or even taking a cell phone into a building I'm investigating at. Because even if your cell phone is not in a conversation, in other words, you're using a cell phone to talk with, it's still transmitting every so many seconds an identification to let the computer system that operates our cell phone back at the carrier, it's letting them know that it is on and it can receive a call. So that transmission our cell phone is giving out at random that we're not even aware of can very well give us false reading where, oh, I think I got something in my K2 just went off. Well, when it was really, it was your own cell phone in your pocket. So for that reason, they keep from having a false reading from that. Like I say, one of the key things I do, and when I'm trying to work with somebody to train them, I always tell them, if at all possible, leave your cell phone out in your car or in your hotel room. Or if you don't absolutely have to have it with you, don't while you're doing an investigation because of the false reading thing that could occur.
Well, if you turn it all the way off, it's not communicating at all, though, is it?
Well, we would think that, but there actually has been evidence that people have, this may sound crazy, there are people out there who have developed a means of hacking cell phones where they can listen in to what's going on in your home or what have you. Even if you thought you turned your phone off, they can switch part of it on where it looks like the phone's off, but it's actually able to transmit a radio signal using the microphone on your phone. I actually seen a newscast one day where this woman, she was set up to do this on purpose, but she turned her cell phone on and off rather, and went into a meeting with her boss at this newspaper office, and the news people were outside in a van with this gentleman who was showing them that there are apps on the internet that you can get that will, if you happen to know a person's cell phone number, can turn that phone on without their knowledge. So for that reason, they often suggest to you, if you're going into a meeting where it may be something vital or something that's not supposed to leak out of that room, if you have to carry your phone in, take the battery out, because that's the only true way of keeping it from coming on, if the battery itself is removed.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah. There needs to be a list of do's and don'ts for paranormal researchers. And I would add to that, no perfume, no aftershave, no cologne.
I agree with you 100%. I always say that because there can be odors that come from the other world, and we won't be able to tell them apart if each of us are wearing some type of perfume or cologne, because it's giving us false smell readings, and we really don't want that to happen. So yeah, I agree with you 100%. I often say that too. Don't use aftershave. Don't even use deodorant unless you absolutely have to. You know, there's some people that have to, but for the most part, I tell people don't use these methods of smelling better, because that will interfere with us getting a true scent reading from where we're investigating.
Yeah, I know that there are some substances like tobacco. What people don't understand is that tobacco resin sits in things. It sits in cracks of the floor wood, inside duct systems, and it can be activated by humidity, etc. Yeah, I kind of
right.
just sort of yeah. discount people when they say they smell smoke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I stopped smoking about 12 or 13 years ago, and now my nose is very sensitive to noticing it over where someone has smoked. I have a daughter who will smoke and come home, and I'll say, I know you were smoking again. How do you know when I was stopped smoking? I said, because I can smell the scent on your clothing. Like you said, it leaves a residue, and it's very noticeable when the person, let's say, sweats or what have you. Even if you don't feel like you're sweating, your body does give off an amount of moisture. And yes, like you said, it will activate that resin that's in your clothing. And especially for a person who doesn't smoke, yeah, they're going to sense that.
Yeah, I never use, whenever I come across somebody who essentially their clothes are punching me in the face, I never use the word, I sense it on your clothes. I'm like, no, your clothes are spilled with stench. There's nothing worse to me than the stench of stale cigarette tobacco smoke. Oh, my. Ugh.
I agree with you 100%. And I often say to myself, I don't even know how I used to stand it when I was smoking.
I keep wondering, you know, it's 2017. Why are there still smokers? I can understand older people who have been addicted for decades, but young people, when I see somebody in their 20s or something lighting up, I'm like, why? How do you not know or even consider a good choice?
Well, I don't know. Maybe they want to give us more people to investigate.
There you go.
But I agree with you 100%. It doesn't seem like there's any logic behind it. I don't know why people are continuing to smoke. And truthfully, I don't really see the advantage of those electronic vapor things. I don't see where that helps anyone.
That actually helps people become addicted to cigarettes. They've
already, I have seen it.
Yeah.
Yes,
they've already figured that out.
Yes. Right. For some reason, it'll get them to a point where that will not satisfy them anymore, so they pick up the real thing after that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree with you 100%. I have seen cases like that.
And you get these people who don't smoke, and you go into a small house or wherever where there were smokers, and you're breathing all over things. It's hot and it's humid, and all of a sudden everybody smells smoke and thinks it's paranormal when, in fact, a smoker lived there.
Yeah.
Yes.
In fact, that's why a lot of people posting on eBay clarify that it's coming from a non-smoking house. Because some people will get something they buy on eBay and like, oh, what the?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, because it does carry that odor. If it's a material or a plastic item, they do have a tendency to absorb the odor or resin from the odor of a tobacco, thing that they're smoking. Yeah, that happens a lot. I shy away from objects like that have been around. And in addition to that, there's also the fact that it seems to discolor clothing, plastic items. It adds a discoloration to it, which doesn't help things.
Our time has just flew right on by.
Wow. We always have such great conversations.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And, we want to thank you for taking time to be with us. I want to give you a chance to give out all your sites, information and everything, and then stay on for a minute till after we're off and we'll chat with you for a minute.
All right. It's been great.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, if anyone wishes to contact me, they can do so. Go directly to my website of the organization. It's www.theparanormalman, spelled as all one word, .com. And, of course, if you have questions, you can send it to mike@theparanormalman.com. You can also contact through Facebook. It's herman.stevenson. With Herman being my first name, I usually go by my middle name, Michael or Mike. But on Facebook, it'll be herman.stevenson. You can come up on my Facebook page. And I also have, of course, another page for, it's called Prayer Request, that if you have someone who needs to pray for, or even yourself, you can leave a message there, and I'll be more than happy to post it and help say a few prayers for you or anyone else. So, I kind of covered all the bases like that for very good reasons. And I'm more than happy to chat with anyone at any time. Please contact me. And on the website, you can get the Paranormal Man phone number. If you like, I'll give it to you now. It's 443-326-8568. Call. If I'm not available to answer at that moment, I will get back with you. So please leave me a message. That pretty much covers all the ways to contact me. And if anyone needs to have me investigate something for you, or even if you have a question concerning anything, please contact me. I'll be more than happy to work with you on anything.
All right. Jeff, you want to give our stuff out real quick?
Well, essentially, all of our links are at theparanormalview.com, which is our official website. We're also on Facebook. Just do a quick search. Just Facebook.com/theparanormalview, all one word. Please like us. And there you go.
All right. With that, next week we have Edie Nathan going to be on. She was with Psychic Kids. And we'll be talking about therapy for lost loved ones. So ought to be an interesting show because she deals in a lot of stuff. So with that, this is Henry Foister.
And Jeffrey Gould.
And we will see you next week at the same time.
Bye, all.
You've been listening to The Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. Join us again next week at the same time for more of The Paranormal View.